am really happy to be back. I had a high that lasted for hours after the previous call. I was so happy and had a real sense of connection with people, even though most people were not speaking. My sense of that connection was confirmed when I think the class size almost doubled since last week, right? So that was affirming and exciting. Now I would like to start. The topic of today is overcoming our fear of no, and to support people in kind of like working through some of this and getting in touch with understanding what happens around no. Well, hopefully some of you received and did the worksheet, the journal that you received from Mary. And whether or not you did that, I wanted to start our inquiry today first by connecting with, I mean, if you have ever had difficulty in hearing a no or have a fear of hearing a no, what is it that makes it so hard to hear a no? Did anybody get in touch with anything like that while you were doing the worksheet or right in the moment? Let's take a moment of, you know, silence for each person to connect and then just reflect for yourself. What makes it hard to hear a no when you make a request? So I'm happy to hear whoever has reflected on it and has a response that you'd like to share. What makes it hard for you to hear a no?
Well, this is Vulpinder. For me, it's I feel like the person doesn't care about me.
Yeah. It's very simple. It's the fundamental vulnerability of whenever we make a request, there is always behind the request the hidden question that we don't say, which is, do I matter? Do I matter enough for somebody to say yes to me? And if the person says no, it's easy to interpret it as they don't care. Anything else from anyone else about what makes it hard to hear a no?
Another from Sebastopol. What happens is it brings the pain of all the other no's I've heard before. So there is a level of painful experience about hearing no.
Uh-huh. So each no is connected in an invisible chain to all the previous no's.
Yes.
Yeah. And so is there something different about all those previous no's from what Bhupinder shared with us, this sense of they don't care? Or does it intensify that pain, or is there some other pain for you?
It intensifies the pain that I really don't matter and people don't care. And also, I mean, there is a sense of visibility and nakedness in asking. So it's just kind of, wow, when someone says no, it makes me feel more. It's more than vulnerability. It's almost an anguish.
Anguish, yeah. About being exposed to the possibility of hearing a no.
Yeah.
And let me see, because I'm, you know, hearing the depth of your pain, I want to have more understanding of what the need is underneath that pain. Do you have any clarity about that?
Yeah, it's a need for, I guess, a need for mutuality. The way the person says no, a need for my request to be welcomed.
Aha. Uh-huh. So there's something about wanting to be received with gentleness.
Yes.
Regardless of whether the person is going to say yes or no.
Yes. Just the welcome and the warmth and the gentleness says, and the curiosity too about, I guess, what are you asking? What are you really asking, and how am I hearing that the person is interested in what I'm asking, and even if they can't meet the strategy,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
but willing to cooperate and just come towards and really mm-hmm. being inquisitive about it.
Yeah, so you're pointing to the uncoupling of need from strategy. When you make a request, you want your needs to be received with care, even if the strategy doesn't work for the other person.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Nava. Wondering if anybody else has a similar or different experience to this that you would like to bring forward.
I was saying my question or my comment is that in addition to one of the struggles or difficulties for me, that one will have about my worth, so to speak, in relation to that person, is am I capable to find the right word, the right way to express my need so that the person will value it? So this is sort of doubt of my own capabilities in finding the right way to deliver the message. That's frustrating to me.
Yeah. So even before hearing a no, you have some hesitation about making a request, I'm guessing, unless you're really sure that the person will say yes, there's some hesitation about how you can bring forth your need in a way that will tap into the generosity of the other person. Yeah.
That's exactly it.
Yes. There is so much tenderness around requests that I'm sometimes amazed how we ever make requests. And it reminds me of something that I think I didn't say last week when we talked about requests and demands, which is that sometimes we mask the vulnerability of making a request by making a demand. It's if I make a demand, unconsciously I'm protecting myself from the possibility of your saying no. Because the whole purpose of a demand is that you can't say no. But really underneath that demand often is great fear of hearing no and being able to maintain a sense of dignity internally. I want to kind of like reverse the tables and ask a different question, which is, hearing all of this, does anybody have any ideas about what you can do if you're going to say no to someone that can help them receive your no? Hearing, as we just did, how vulnerable it is to hear a no. What can we do when we deliver the no to make it easier for the other person?
This is Manda from Chicago. One of the things that I have learned and heard is to share what is the yes behind the no. But first, knowing it for myself, and then sharing that, and sharing what keeps me from saying yes to what I'm being asked of.
So when you say the yes behind the no, you're talking about your needs that are precious to you, that keep you from wanting to pursue the particular strategy that the person asked you about. Did I get that?
That is correct.
I like that. I like really connecting the other person with what keeps me from saying yes. I still find there's something missing there, even with that, that will still help create more ease in the flow of the dialogue when I'm about to say a no.
Maybe first also acknowledging what I'm being asked, just reflecting back what I'm being asked, and then sharing where I am with that and what is keeping me.
So acknowledging what you're being asked. Let's reverse the tables again. I like kind of like going back and forth about this so that we can tune it from both ends of this very, very challenging transaction. Imagine yourself, you just made a request, and the person that you made a request of acknowledges and reflects what was being asked and then shares with you the needs that are keeping them from saying yes to your request. Is this enough to address this do I matter tenderness Or is there more that you would need? I'd like to hear from someone. Would it be sufficient for you?
This is Bhupinder from Canada. It would not be sufficient for me. I would want to hear. I really care about you, and I would love to meet your needs. But at this time, I really have a need for this, and would you be willing to wait?
So really, what you want is not just a reflection, but in addition to a reflection, an active expression of care.
Mm-hmm.
So that the person with the request not only is acknowledged for what they're asking, but they're also acknowledged for that hidden question that is hardly ever said explicitly, which is, do I matter? Acknowledged for that and responded to, yes, you matter, I care about you. That's independent from my willingness in this moment to do what you asked, still finding a way to explicitly express the care. I want to take a moment to pause in silence and ask everyone to imagine a moment of when you make a request and the other person expresses to you these two things. One is, I care about your needs. And the other is, I have needs of my own that are preventing me from saying yes. Does that address for you that vulnerability, that sense that you're cared about, even if the person says no? Does that bridge that gap? I'm really curious. It's kind of like a research project. What makes it possible? I want to hear from people. Does this feel sufficient?
This is Becky in Atlanta. I think it might help if they made a guess about, if I'm the person making the request, if they made a guess about what my need might be.
Yes, thank you. I wasn't explicit about that. It's really kind of like three parts. Really connecting empathically with the needs that you are expressing, conveying the care for those needs, and conveying the information about needs that would get in the way of saying yes. That threesome combination is what I am proposing when we are trying to deliver a no. And I will turn the tables back about receiving a no, but right now that's what I'm suggesting, and then checking with everyone. If everybody responded to you in this way, would life be more wonderful about making requests?
This is Kanya. For me, if somebody were to say no, if I could also hear if they understand the impact of them saying no to me, then I really have a sense that they understood.
So give me an example of how you imagine that could be conveyed.
For example, if somebody were to, like a client of mine really wants to make an appointment with me, and then if I were to say no, and I were to let the person know, and I hear that if you don't have this appointment with me, you are going to, you know, there are some things that you want to work out that you really want to work out now with me, and that you're not going to be able to. Something like that.
Okay, so also acknowledging the effect of the no.
Yes.
Would help you receive a no.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This is Bhupinder. I would like one to know, I care about you, and I can't meet your need right now because I need to do this, this, this. And then make a request, would you be willing to wait until such a time or here when they are possibly able to meet that need.
You want some continuation of the dialogue, some request designed to support me in meeting my needs in some fashion.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it's not always the case that tomorrow I will be happy to, you know, do what you're asking. It may very well be the case that I will never want to do it. And I still care about your needs. I want to really, you know, kind of like take one step back and say this. Some years ago, somebody came to me with a request that I said no to. And the person had this trigger about not experiencing care. And we stayed in dialogue. And through that dialogue, I understood something that was, for me, quite profound, which is this. I care about you, and I'm willing to be a strategy to meet your needs, are not synonymous. And I can prove it instantly. I actively care about several billion people that live on this planet. I know that. I feel it in my heart. I cannot possibly be a strategy to meet all these people's needs. It's impossible. But that doesn't mean I don't care. Essentially, what we're looking for when we deliver a no is to find a way to uncouple the caring from the agreeing to your strategy. Does this make sense to you, Bhupinder?
Yeah, as long as I know that the person was caring enough for them to, as you say, stay in dialogue to find other strategies. That may not be them, but maybe there's other ways they can help.
Yeah, and I may not be able even to be in dialogue with all the people that want to be in dialogue with me. And still, that does not mean that I don't care. It's really, really wanting to have clarity about the difference between those two. I don't have to agree to any strategy of yours as a way to express my care, because otherwise there's some subtle way in which it becomes a demand. Wondering how you feel hearing this.
I agree with what you just said. I guess as long as I knew the caring was there, I think I'd be able to deal with it.
Yeah.
I'd be comfortable with it.
Yeah. So what I'm excited about is we have come up with a variety of ways to express the caring. It's not like a rule book that we have to follow A, B, C, D, E. It's just some way that I want to use the vulnerability of receiving no as a way to increase our consciousness about delivering no's to others. Now I want to turn back to the overall experience of hearing a no, which is that the vast majority of people that are going to say no to us don't have these skills. They're just going to say, no, that doesn't work for me. How can we stretch ourselves to be able to hear their care without them expressing it? I don't have an answer to that.
This is Kathy. I have something. Even if you say you care about somebody, what's coming up for me is wishing to be important enough to you that you would make me a priority. Or wishing, I'm just saying you, I'm using a generic term, that wishing that that person who I asked, that I was so important to them, because what I'll think about is, well, I know if somebody else asked them, this person or that person, they would be more of a priority than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel hurt with those thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a reality to the fact that given that we are not able to be a strategy for every human being's needs on the planet, we make choices, make
right.
priorities. And receiving that can be challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Still, I'm guessing that it's hard to hear the care. It's still, I think, some expression that it's hard to hear the care if the person is making a different priority from the one that you want.
Right.
Then I want to challenge it one step further and say, if they are making a different priority, even if they don't like you. This is purely an expression of their needs. It's not about you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering how you respond to that internally, just to the imagining that possibility of receiving another person's no as being an expression of their needs rather than something that reflects on you.
Well, it kind of lightens up. It's like, oh, maybe it's not personal.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember a conversation that I had with a friend one time where she was part of a group and she was really worried that there were people in the group that didn't like her, and what was she going to do about that? For a while, I gave her empathy about how much she wants to be liked and how much she wants belonging and this or that or the other. And then eventually, I brought to her attention the possibility that maybe they're not liking her was something about them and not something about her, was something about what their needs are. And that really helped her, even separately from the empathy. That piece helped her lighten that load. Thank you, Kathy. Anything else about this stretching to imagine the other person's care, even when they say no, before we move to the next part of today's topic?
Hi, Mickey. This is Sheila from Oakland. I was thinking in terms of stretching is that also feeling the, being willing to feel the pain and the vulnerability at the same time. You know, it's like, I don't think I just heal that quickly as we're doing this work, but I realize I have to feel the pain still that I'm, that tenderness, I'm still trying to hear the care, but I'm also feeling my own pain as well and not confuse them.
Oh, thank you. I really so enjoyed the way you said that. Really taking ownership of your pain as being about you and your needs.
Yeah.
Separate from where the other person is and whether they care or not.
Right.
Thank you. I really appreciate this addition. Thank you so much. I want to now shift focus to, okay, so we got through the first moment of hearing a no. We understand the complexity of that. And then what? What do we do afterwards? I wanted to bring to this one other thing that became clear to me as I was working with all of these ideas over the years, which is that there is a tendency that very many of us have that once another person says no, we take that as a demand. So we work very hard to shift from being in demand to being in request so that we're willing to hear a no. And then we forget that the no is itself an expression of needs and take it as a demand to back off. So then we give up on our needs. Curious if anybody recognizes that this is something that you do.
I have a habit of doing that. I withdraw.
Yeah.
I withdraw, and I don't come back again.
Yeah. It's really important in if we want to use the NVC process to maintain true dialogue, it's critical that we figure out a way to stay in dialogue in those moments that we have a tendency to withdraw and to give up. So one of the things that will help us is if we do the kind of work that we talked about before, of really, I really like the way that Sheila said it, to really own our vulnerability as our own, as the needs that we have for mattering, for dignity, for being welcome, for acceptance, whatever the needs are, and really do the work of sitting with those needs and opening up to that experience, as well as doing the work of guessing and trusting the other person's overall goodwill and care independently of whether or not they're going to do what we ask. So that's one aspect of preparing for the dialogue. Another aspect is the work that was in the worksheet that includes both uncoupling strategy from need and being able to hold on to my need without being attached to the outcome of the particular strategy with this particular person in this particular moment. Being able to come up with other strategies, and there are times when that is very difficult. And I'd like to hear from some people, either that worked through the journal at home or right now, if you can imagine a time when you make a request of someone and they say no, and what is the strategy that you ask them for, and what's the need underneath that, and can you drop into the need and imagine other strategies? So I'd like to hear from anyone that has connected with that, either before or right now, and has something come up around that. This is where NVC starts really being a spiritual practice of letting go of outcome, non-attachment. Has anyone successfully touched that? If not, we can have somebody bring an example forth and we can walk through it in real time right now.
This is Manda from Chicago.
Hi, Manda.
I wanted to respond to your first request of how it is when I can come from a place of recognizing that I have more than one strategy and stay connected with my need and not the strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sharing that I used to have a tendency to believe that I only had one strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm learning and working on practicing to remember that there are more than one strategies. And when I can do that successfully, I feel a sense of freedom and also a sense of abundance.
Mm. Thank you. That's very sweet. Do you have an example? Just so people can have some inspiration about what that looks like.
At the present moment, actively, I am working around my father, who is 84 and is not doing well, and we don't know what exactly is wrong, but recognizing and understanding that my one thought process is not the only way that I can come with an outcome, but being aware that there is a lot more to the whole thing than just my way of thinking, wanting to do things, has released me as a physician myself. And being a doctor and a doctor puts me under a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to help me to relieve some of that pressure by recognizing that my needs are to care and give the well-being, care and add to the well-being, and there are other needs on the table and other strategies that can be dealt with, not just my strategy of doing all these tests and recognizing what this is and getting the fix-it attitude.
Thank you. I'm really appreciating this example. It's so concrete and clear. Kind of like familiar way, I'm guessing, that you have as a trained in medicine when somebody is not well and you want to contribute to their well-being is to do a series of tests and do this to fix it, to find out what's going on and all of that. And you got some freedom and inner spaciousness to realize that that was the need, and there could be other ways of contributing to that. Yeah?
Yes.
Thank you, Manda.
Yes, thank you.
I really appreciated this. I'd like to hear if there's anyone else who has experienced a similar shift that you'd like to share with people.
Hello, this is Joy from Memphis. For me, this is one of the richest parts of failed requests, actually.
Of failed requests?
Yes, when someone makes a request and the need can't be met.
Uh-huh.
in my work as a congregational consultant, this happened so often in a congregational setting where a group of people wanted something and a larger group of people didn't. You know, if they had just voted on it, those people would have lost. But what I tried to do was to work with people so that we could get away from the strategies and look at the underlying needs and see if there was something really creative that we could do to come up with something that never existed before that would meet everyone's needs. So that immediate request might not be met, but the deeper longing could be met.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this example, because ultimately the capacity to dialogue about this comes from a willingness to embrace both our needs and the other party's needs, which may be more than one person.
Sometimes that's very hard to get people to do.
Yes.
But if, you know, if it's a community where they trust each other, it's a lot easier.
Yes. What makes it hard is two things. One is that our habit is to really mesh together our need and strategy. And it takes some practice and discipline to uncouple the strategy from the need and to really see the need as its own unique experience, not attached to the particular way that it's going to be met. That in itself is a stretch for many people. And then there's actually a further spiritual stretch, which is that even if we can let go of strategies, much of the time we carry an unconscious idea that just because I have a need, it has to be met. And a real challenge in living with unmet needs, even if it's for a short amount of time. There is an image that was created, I think, by Peter Senge, who is an organizational consultant, that I'd like to share with everyone. But before I go there, I forgot the name of the person I was just speaking with, and I wanted to know if you were complete.
Hi, I'm back with you. It's Joy.
Yes.
Yes, and I like where you're going with this. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Because I wanted to make sure that it's clear that I'm talking to everyone, not just to you. So Peter Senge, who is a rather well-known organizational consultant and author of many books, has this image of rubber band that we hold in tension. When we stretch a rubber band, there is a lot of pressure to collapse it. Similarly, he uses that metaphor to look at the tension between what we want and what is actually going on. For a moment, I'm getting out of the idea of needs, because that's not the language that he uses, but just in terms of, I want things to be a certain way, and then things are a particular way. If there is a difference between them, there is tension. And we tend to collapse that tension in one of two ways. Either we try to force the world to be what we want it to be. And that's where demands and anger and resentment and all of these kinds of experiences come from. Trying to really push on the world to ensure that we get what we want, that we make it be what we want. That collapses the tension. It doesn't really create a happy existence, but it collapses the tension between wanting something and not having it. The other way that we tend to collapse that tension is by giving up on what we want. Then we push ourselves to be where the world is so that we don't have to have the tension. And what Peter Senge says is the real creativity lies in holding on to the tension, really being able to tolerate inside me an experience of wanting something that for this moment I don't see how I can have. Without giving up on the wanting, letting go of the having, without giving up on the wanting. It's one of the biggest spiritual challenges that we have, being able to hold and tolerate our unmet needs without shutting down to them. I want to open it up and see if anybody worked your way through this part of the worksheet and if you have anything to share of your experiences.
Mickey, it's Kate here. This is so fantastic for me because what I found working through the sheet was that if I imagine the person would not shift on their position of their no, I immediately, after doing all the strategies of dropping my needs and doing a whole heap of other things, eventually I come back to almost checking my intention, which comes a bit in the form of feels like it shifted. And I didn't really want understanding in the first place. What I really was looking for was dialogue, which I'm now seeing that's a strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me to a place of the request I had of myself eventually was to work on opening to the idea that I already had everything I needed. I didn't need more information from this person. I didn't actually really even need more understanding. That, I don't know if I'm being very clear.
Here's what I'm getting from it is that I'm getting from it an experience that I'm familiar with is as you look deeper and deeper into it, each thing melts in your hands and you keep dropping to deeper and deeper layers of heart opening and kind of learning and acceptance and shifting inside yourself that I get a sense is really kind of like juicy and joyful. Did I get it right?
That's sort of what it is. There's a little bit of, not necessarily separation from the world, but there's a little bit of coming into myself on a much deeper level of already being enough and already having enough and not even noticing the unmet need in some form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's sort of what I wanted to say.
Thank you. What I'm getting from this is kind of a paradox, which is that once I start focusing on the need rather than on is it going to be met or not, really what I remove is the resistance in me to the idea of having an unmet need.
Mm.
Once I can open to the possibility of having an unmet need, it's almost like I move to another reality in which it matters less, and then I'm available to flow with life in a different way. Thank you from bringing this forward. Anybody else had an experience with this that you'd like to share?
This is Anne. Today, I was at work and I felt a lot of difficult feelings coming up inside me, and I really wanted to do some self-empathy with myself. At the same time, I knew that since I was at work, I really needed to meet other needs, that is for effectiveness of my work. And so I was made a request to myself that at 7 o'clock, I knew I would have time, that I would address those feelings. And so I agreed to that, and I still felt the feelings, but I didn't make demands on myself about it. I was able to maybe move on the way that you said.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
This is Stephanie in Boston. I'm getting happy to have feelings and needs at all, just telling myself, isn't it great to be alive? I'm a human being. I have feelings and needs. And so when I have one and it's unmet, I just like to notice it being there.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I'm hungry right now and I didn't have time to eat before this started.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell myself, wow, it's cool. Need met later on.
Yeah, so there is some way in which the experience of having a need, whether it's met or unmet, just the experience of having a need connects you to the experience of being alive.
Exactly.
Thank you. I'm appreciating this.
Thank you.
Yeah. All this work of releasing the attachment first to the particular strategy, and second, even to the need itself, really prepares me for the dialogue. Because if I am in this place of attachment, my energy is consumed by my attachment. And it's like I don't have energy left to hear what is going on for the other person. Once I release some of that, then I can open up to hearing, imagining what might be the needs behind the no that the person is saying to me. We're still at that. And the real commitment, if I am serious about making a request and not a demand, it's a very, very powerful commitment. The commitment underlying making a request rather than a demand. So actually, I want to say differently. The commitment to making a request and neither making the request into a demand by insisting that the person say yes, nor making the other person's response be a demand by giving up on what I want. That commitment to really hold the request in the dialogue is a commitment to holding both of our needs with the same degree of care. And culturally, personally, contextually, we might be in a place of prioritizing the other person's needs more by backing off, or prioritizing our needs more by pushing. And really, what the space from which dialogue arises is the space in which we embrace both of our needs and the project of finding a strategy that will work for both of us. So I'm curious if anyone has an example of where you were able yourself to reach that place in the face of somebody's no, to really embrace both your need and the other person's need.
Hi, Mickey. This is Sheila from Oakland.
Hi.
I was excited about our first course. One of the things is I have to make a request with my mom, who's ill and needs 24-hour care. And so I was trying to hold what we talked about last time about being transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister's taking care of my mom at my request, but I don't know how long while I find resources. So I had to go up to make the request to ask my sister to take care of my mother longer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was terrified because, you know, I hadn't really figured out how to hold my own pain.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, understand that she could say no because my mother has dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to ask, but I was asking from the last course about being transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And I was scared. I had to say, I want to be transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And ask if you can take care of mom. And she didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what we've done already, just from the first course, I said, can you tell me what you need? So I was able to go and not be committed to her taking care of her, but if we hadn't have done this course, I would have been.
Uh-huh. So just what we did last week has helped you really shift inside to a place where her saying no opened your heart to exploring with her.
Yeah, and we did it. It was so powerful. We never did that before, and so we explored needs of both people. And it was, I've never done that before with my family member, and it was really, really amazing.
Mm.
And then she was able to say yes. But after she got her needs met, and, you know, there were some strategies,
mm-hmm.
but it came after hearing the needs.
Yes.
Yeah.
There is something about embracing both sets of needs that allowed you to open to her, and then I'm guessing then she opened to you, and there was mutual trust and mutual goodwill that allowed you to come up with more elaborate and creative strategies that ultimately work for both of you.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm really, really moved to hear this. I know you, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I know who you are. So it's like having somebody that I know be on the call, and I don't even know that they're on the call. And it helps in a tangible way, even though you didn't speak. That really moves me in terms of my hope for being able to move this project forward of
supporting people and living differently. So I'm really excited to hear this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else has any experience with finding the place in you that really embraces both sets of needs?
This is Jan. I think I just wanted to say that I think just the curiosity helps. Just bring that curiosity of, wow, I mean, bringing both needs. If both needs are there, we can get those on the table. I wonder where we'll be then, you know?
Yeah. That curiosity arises from letting go of the attachment, doesn't it?
I guess so, yeah.
It's like suddenly it's like, okay, if it doesn't have to be this way or give up, then what can happen? Let's explore energy that I hear in that curiosity. Yeah, thank you. Anything else anybody has to add about this particular bit?
This is Ellen from Oakland.
Hi, Ellen.
The thing that I wanted to add to this conversation about, I've had the experience of holding both needs and having a dialogue, but what I find happens sometimes is that it shifts. A week later, 3 weeks later, I can find myself back not being able to hold both. So I guess I have a question regarding that at the moment I'm holding them both and I'm at peace with that. And then when the shift occurs, is it just life itself that takes over and needs are not static? Or is it that I really wasn't embracing both needs? As we're talking, that the question of the shifting and the changing of needs,
mm-hmm.
or the intensity of it, I'd wonder if you would say something about that.
Yes. Thank God that life shifts all the time. It would be very challenging if everything was always the same. I totally believe that things happen that shift things, that just happen on their own. I want to raise two interpersonal dynamics that could contribute to the kind of phenomena that you're talking about. Not that I think that's going on for you, but just to talk about them in case they might be going on for you or for other people, you know, who could also benefit from this. And one is that sometimes we work out a dialogue and reach some agreement about a strategy. There is what I call an unwritten contract. The unwritten contract says this: I will accept this arrangement that we just came up with, and in exchange you will do something else. But I'm not going to tell you what it is. And you won't even know that you signed this contract with me. But when the time comes that you don't do this other thing, then I will renege on my feeling good about our agreement now. That happens sometimes. Is it clear what I mean?
Yes.
And the other one is not as ornate, but it's a similar thing of where the habit of collapsing in the face of a no can be so strong that I contract inside myself the space that I allow for my needs so that I don't really bring myself forward to the dialogue in full. And then outside that space and time, when I come back to reconnection, suddenly my needs take up more space inside me. And the dialogue no longer feels good. So both of these kinds of things can be happening.
Okay,
is this helpful for the question that you asked?
Yes, thank you. It's very, very helpful and useful. Thank you.
And I'm curious if anybody else has anything more about this kind of thing.
Mickey, this is Cindy in Tallahassee. I just wanted to mention, too, that what I'm noticing as I'm using NVC in my life,
mm-hmm.
is that the shift that you're talking about, for me, tends to take time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and there's been a certain level of frustration initially in trying to use NVC in a communication. And then what I'm noticing is that usually when I back off and I have time to reflect upon
mm-hmm.
what happened, and then I make a second attempt at the communication,
yeah.
that I can then become more in that space of kind of letting go of my particular strategy. But it seems like it's almost like clockwork for me, that my initial attempt is just more about frustration, and then it usually takes a few hours or a day to come back to it, and then I'm a lot more able to really tap into the need for the other person and identify for myself, too, what's going on. But
And Cindy, if I'm not mistaken, you just started practicing NVC 2 weeks ago, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true.
Let me just say, you know, a slightly non-NVC thing, give yourself a break. I'm appreciating what you're bringing forward, which is that so much of the work is internal and takes time to integrate. And it takes quite a bit of time for most people to integrate that capacity to shift into the place of needs, my own and others, in real time. And I'm hearing that you are able to do it offline and come back to the dialogue. I'm appreciating that you're even trying and not giving up. So welcome to the community of people trying to figure out different ways of integrating this consciousness. Thank you for this contribution, that just a reminder that we don't always have to do it on the spot. We can come back to dialogues, even if we don't manage to get through them in the first place. Thank you. I want to take the last bit of our time to give you some dialogue tips and maybe do a little bit of a role play if we manage to get to that. One of the things that I want to say, the person who started making the request and the other person started by saying no, ultimately, the other person has the exact same vulnerability that you have about whether or not they matter, which they bring to their saying no and to anything else that ensues in the dialogue. How do we handle the vulnerability of the other person? And clearly this requires a lot of bigness of us in a moment of our own vulnerability to open our heart to the vulnerability of another at the same time. Any thought of how we can do that, what we can do to handle the vulnerability of the other person?
Well, this is Bhupender, to maybe acknowledge that you understand that they're also as vulnerable as you are, know that they matter.
Acknowledging their vulnerability. In fact, in this moment, what is so clear to me is that it really doesn't matter who made the initial request. If we are really committed to embracing both of our needs, then it's exactly the same approach that we would use in saying no to another person's request. It's almost like turning it around and hearing an implicit request in the other person's expression of no. And that implicit request could sound something like, you know, in this moment, I'm feeling some stress because I'm trying to imagine what they might be saying that they're not saying. So it's as if instead of saying no, the person were to say, in this moment, I'm feeling some stress. I care about you. I want to support you. You're asking me for something that is not going to meet my needs to do. And I am feeling helpless and I want some creativity. Would you tell me if you can see some other way that both of our needs could be met? If we could hear that whenever somebody says no, that would be a huge difference in terms of our capacity to move through this dialogue. So one of the things that we can do when we express a request and the other person says no is to receive their no with empathy so that we can support them in uncovering their yes behind the no, their needs that are leading them to say no. Wondering if anyone has had practice with this and would like to share an experience when where you were able to do just that.
I'll speak up. I had made a request actually to Mary McKenzie and that she said no to, and then I responded and I told her, well, You know, actually, when I think about it, it didn't seem very realistic after I expressed the request to you. And, I mean, it wasn't totally explicit in how you're saying, but I at least said something that, yeah, it doesn't seem very realistic, and this is what I'm going to do instead.
So you shifted your strategy.
Yeah.
Which is different for me than staying in empathic dialogue with her.
Okay.
Do you hear the difference?
Yes, because I really wasn't acknowledging what was going on for her in the no.
Yeah. Oh, okay, I know what I was going to do. I was going to share with you a kind of a dialogue that shows this. So person A says to person B, you know, when I see the clothes on the floor here, I am feeling distressed because I'm really wanting there to be order and beauty in our house. Are you willing to pick up the clothes and put them back in place? So that's person A. Person B says, no, I don't really want to do it right now. And person A then says, I'm feeling some sadness hearing this because I just really want support and a quality of care between us. Would you tell me what you're hearing me say? Person B then says, okay, hearing about how much this matters to you, I'm happy to pick up the clothes and put them in the closet. In that moment, person B changed the strategy, shifted from no to yes, but it doesn't actually acknowledge where person A is. Person B is just shifting strategies but bypassing the connection. Does this make sense to you, Jan?
Yes, because I'm not really acknowledging where that other person is.
Yeah, yeah. So it's in a dialogue, in a moment when we have conflicting strategies that are our favorite strategies, and we're trying to move forward with a dialogue towards a strategy that will work for both of us, how can we do that without creating that sweet connection that is the well from within which creative strategies emerge? So a big tip in these dialogues is to really, even if you're ready to shift, to nurture the connection by empathic connection, by entering reflective empathic space with the person who said no. Yeah. So that's one tip. Another tip that I have, we'll focus more on that in a later week of this class, but I want to start talking about it. Really helpful to move from solution request to connection request. So if I'm asking you for some, you know, to do the dishes and you say no, and I'm empathizing with you and connecting with why you don't want to do the dishes, and I then want to express myself again, because in the dialogue we move back and forth between empathy and expression. Empathy and expression, that's the dance that we dance with people. When I come back to expression, I'd like to make connection requests rather than solution requests. Requests that are about this moment, how we stay in connection, how we keep tending to our capacity to understand each other, to our capacity to hold both of our needs with care, to our capacity to trust each other. How do I do all these things with my requests? And the last tip that I have is, often what people do is they repeat the same request a second time after making connection. I worry that it conveys to the other person that they don't matter. Like, I didn't hear their no. If I make the exact same request again that they had said no to, how can that convey to them that I care about their need? So those are some of the tips that I have in terms of shifting to a place of dialogue and really getting into the dialogue. And we have a few minutes left, so if anybody would like to practice a little dialogue, setting up a role play, I'd be very happy to support you in that, to give you some coaching.
I'm excited about the idea of holding the two needs and deepening that process of exchange. And I'm wondering, how do I do this when I have no idea what the other person's needs may be? When they, for example, I made a request and they said that, well, why don't you go to the next person in command? That's what happens. And it, a year goes by, and then I go back, and they say, well, go to the next person. So in that situation, I'm holding the needs, but I don't know where to go with it.
Uh-huh. So what is the need that you're guessing?
Mine, possibly, space and time, but I gave them a year, and I'm not clear what the need could be. So how do I hold needs when I'm not clear of the other person?
You just really try to guess. So when you say time and space, time is not something that I think of as a need. So is it that you guess that they have something else they want to focus their energy on? Is it that you imagine that they want to focus their energy on something else?
Yes.
What would happen if you guessed that? When they say, go speak to the next person in command, you say, if you just said this to them, are you overwhelmed? Do you want to focus on something else that you're in the middle of working on?
But the challenge that I have is that I've given them almost a year with that, holding that need and my need. So now what do I do, kind of a thing?
So you were giving them a year, so during that whole year you were not in dialogue.
I was in dialogue in the form of a reminder, though. Like, you know, I'm waiting, I hope things get better kind of stuff. But not a connecting, so I make this a connection.
You know, I can imagine starting with an expression, actually, in a case like this where I say, I don't really know the situation, and but just to make it up, you know, I made this request of you a year ago, and in the course of this year, I've been waiting, and now I really want to have more understanding. Could you tell me, even to start by, could you tell me, you know, is it unpleasant for you when you get reminders from me? Is there some way that you would want to be trusted to get to this in your own good time? Even something like this. Start a dialogue.
So then just stay in the dialogue holding both the needs.
Yes.
And if they don't respond, then empathize with them in their silence?
That is a way that you can do it. Ultimately, if the other person doesn't respond, if you're not getting the level of connection, sufficient connection to have dialogue, then what you're left to is that experience of really letting go of the attachment to outcome,
uh-huh,
and connecting to your needs, finding other strategies to meet the needs, or finding peace with not having the needs met.
Okay, yeah, that's helpful.
You can't have dialogue with someone who is not present to be in dialogue with you.
Right. Okay.
You can have connection inside of you, but you can't have dialogue.
Dialogue
involves two people. So you can maintain the connection without dialogue, but you can't have dialogue without interaction.
Right.
I think we are coming up to the end of our time together, and I would really enjoy hearing from maybe one or two people who particularly people who have not spoken, if you can say, you know, like a half a line, a quick line of what you got from our time together today. That nourishes me no end to hear that. A one line of what you got from this call for you.
Hi, it's Brita from Saskatchewan, Canada.
Hi, Brita.
And what I want to say is the piece around that the other person is just as vulnerable when they say no. And that they also need to know that they matter.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It changes the energy around it for me, and it's something I'm going to hold in my heart as I go forward, and especially with my, well, with everyone, but especially with our 4-year-old and in our family.
Thank you. one other person. What are you taking with you from our time together today? And then we'll close.
This is Barbara in Davis, California.
Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I appreciated the insight that when we mask our vulnerability of a request by making a demand.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I have people in my life that tend to make a lot of demands, and I guess this helps me to be more understanding of where it's coming from. So I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. I'm very, very nourished by these being the two pieces that people are taking with them, because I connect with how much one of my big hopes is that doing this class or learning NVC in general will open people's hearts to other people. Thank you so much.